And joining us on short notice is Bryn Stoll, who writes for The Advocate. And yesterday, he had the top story above the fold in the Sunday edition, Detail Sharpened in Sterling Shooting. And you've been following the story for some time.
Yeah, I was out on the story the morning after it happened. And that turned into a pretty wild week for just about everyone working in media here, and been desperate to find out more details and in as much as we possibly could in the months since.
And there are some revelations in the story that I did not know, and I've heard, unfortunately, stories in conflict with what is now generally thought to be the case. For example, it was reported in many places that the confrontation began when the officers arrived. That's true from a 911 call. But the story that Alton Sterling had pulled a gun, actually put a gun to the head of the person who called, apparently that is not true.
That's not quite what happened. And there have been rumors and accounts swirling on both sort of on both ends of the spectrum on that. Some people had maintained that, no, that never happened. It was a phony 911 call. Maybe the call never happened. And then there are people, you know, claiming that he had stuck a gun straight to someone's head. What in fact happened was he had some sort of dispute or altercation with a gentleman who they've released very few details about, but he was trying to basically scare off from in front of the store. And during that, he either patted his pocket where he had the gun, or he reached into his pocket and sort of slightly, you know, pulled just enough of the gun out to show the gun, but he never drew it or pointed it at anyone. But he made clear with some sort of gesture like that, that he was carrying a gun and used that to sort of as part of a threat.
Now, have you talked to the man who made the 911 call?
I have not.
Okay. So the call was made. First officer to arrive is Lake. And what happens?
So Lake gets there about 5 seconds before the second officer, Blaine Salamone. And
Five seconds.
About 5 seconds, right. And they're coming in separate patrol cars. And Lake gets out. And at this time, Sterling is talking to a group of about two women, possibly selling a CD to them as he was doing that night in front of the Triple S Food Mart. And Lake tells him, I need to talk to you. And then he orders him to turn around and put your hands in the hood. And Sterling ignores that command and slowly sort of starts walking toward Lake. Not aggressively, not charging, but instead of, as he had asked him, turning around and putting his hands in the hood, he starts walking and his hands are sort of free and at his side. And one key detail that I think has now come out is that the 911 caller had told the dispatcher that Sterling had his gun in his pocket. And that information had been relayed to both officers. So both officers were expecting him to have a gun in his pocket. And Lake asked him twice, sir, I need you to turn around and put your hands on the hood. And he ignored both of those commands.
And then Salamone arrives.
Salamone at this point has arrived and gets out of his car, presumably in time to hear one or both of those commands be ignored. And his basically first entrance into this encounter is as Lake tries to grab hold of maybe Sterling's mm-hmm. left arm, at that moment, he comes in and sticks a gun straight to Sterling's head and says, in a fairly expletive-ridden threat, if you don't put your hands in the hood, I'm going to shoot you in the head. But using a number of expletives as
you
he says that.
You effing bitch.
Yes.
Okay. And then how does Sterling react to that?
He immediately complies and puts his hands in the hood. And throughout this encounter, and this lines up with what the store owner, Abdul Muflahi, had been telling me since the first day, is that Sterling, throughout this whole encounter, had sort of been either confused or acting confused or playing confused or trying to talk his way out of it, some version of that, by saying things like, what do you want? Why are you talking to me? What did I do? Why are you here? And he is apparently still acting confused, apparently confused at this point, but he puts his hands on the hood once the gun comes out. But a couple of seconds later, he sort of tries to turn and pull his hands back off of the hood.
And then what happens?
And at that point, Salamone says something to the effect of, tase him, Howie. And Officer Lake fires a taser into Sterling, which causes him to fall to one knee. He then starts trying to get back up, at which point Lake fires the taser again, but the second taser doesn't take. And that is when, and you can see this in one of the publicly released cell phone videos, Salamone holsters his gun, which he'd been pointing at Sterling up until this moment. He holsters his gun and he tackles him, knocks him onto the hood of a car, and then takes him to the ground.
And they're on the ground. At this point, Sterling, is he resisting? Is he incapacitated? What's going on when they're rolling on the ground?
Well, it's hard to tell exactly. And my understanding is that the additional video that has not yet been made public does not offer any kind of definitive view. But Salamone is sort of straddling Sterling over his sort of over his waist while Lake kneels on his left arm and pins that to the ground. And Salamone is trying to get a hold of Sterling's right arm. And from the video, you can't tell exactly the position of Sterling's right arm, but you can tell that it's still free. And as they're struggling, you hear Salamone at two different occasions yell something to the effect of gun, gun, he's got a gun, or he's going for his gun. And that is when both Lake and Salamone draw their guns again. At one point, you see Lake in one of the publicly released videos point his gun right at Sterling's head.
But he didn't fire.
Lake does not fire, no.
But Salamone does.
Right. So you hear Salamone yell again, he's going for his gun, and then you hear three shots, and then there's a brief pause. Sterling sort of tries to roll to his left and start getting up again.
The shots are within 6 seconds from one through six. And there is that brief pause of a couple of seconds. So what is happening then after the man's been shot three times in the chest?
Sterling apparently begins to roll to his left and at least appears like he's trying to get up. And
But when you're talking about seconds here.
Right. Briefly. And according to the law enforcement sources I've talked to and according to the official announcement from the Department of Justice, it's at this point you cannot, that from Salamone's perspective, they don't believe that you can see, that he couldn't see the right arm and exactly what was happening. So possibly at this point believes he's trying to get up and reach for a gun again. And that's when he puts three more rounds into his back.
So there is no dispute about who fired all six shots?
No dispute at all. All six shots hit Sterling.
All six hit him, and of course he died fairly quickly, as you can imagine. A listener asked if they ever tried to put handcuffs on Sterling.
They appear to at one point, yes. When his hands are on the hood, they're trying to get his arms behind his back, and
A big man.
He's a big man, and it's sort of unclear, I think, whether it could be a combination of him sort of giving some resistance, and also he's well over 300 pounds, and so when you try to put the hands together behind the back of a man that large, it can be difficult even if they're not resisting.
And both officers were not anywhere close to him in physical stature.
No, he's about 6'3", well over 300 pounds. Both officers appear to be a good bit under 6 foot and not nearly that large.
Well, it's up to the Attorney General, Jeff Landry, now. This is the next step. I'm sure you're going to be following this. And fortunately, there was no outbreak of violence, but many are waiting and seeing what the Attorney General will do. It's going to be fascinating how he handles this.
He has a lot to review. The FBI, I mean, my understanding is the FBI and the Department of Justice did a fairly comprehensive investigation and interview, just several dozen witnesses, just about everyone they could find, and there's a lot of material for him to look at.
And it's amazing, Bryn, it's similar to the video. People looked at that video and saw two completely versions of what happened, and now people are looking at the evidence and have two opposite versions. Much of it appears to depend on what's in a person's head before they're presented with the evidence or view the tape.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a number of people I've interviewed sort of about how these cases unfold have suggested that, you know, when you have these videos that go viral, I mean, that freezes people's perceptions.
Right. And quickly, another listener wants to know if we as the people will have access to all the video.
That is what the federal government apparently was anticipating. In part of the way that they rolled this out, they had some meetings with community activists. I believe you had Gary Chambers on here last week, as well as with the Sterling family, and had expressed that would happen. A closed case is public record under Louisiana law.
Well, congratulations on your fine work. Top story in Sunday's Advocate from Bryn Stoll about the Sterling shooting.
Thanks, Jim.